I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Celebrate this July 4th with a special presentation of A Capital 4th. Join your host, Vanessa Williams, with performances from sea to shining sea, starring Jimmy Buffett, Gladys Knight, Alan Jackson, Cynthia Erivo, Pentatonix, Renee Fleming, Train, Jennifer Nettles, Mickey Guyton, Jimmy Allen, Ali'i Cravalho, Laura Osnes, Ali Stroker, and the greatest live fireworks display in the USA. It's A Capital 4th, sponsored by the Boeing Company and American Airlines. Sunday, July 4th, 8, 7 Central. Only on PBS.
So hungover was I today that I went to therapy, and when I got there, they were looking very confused.
Were you scheduled to, or you're just like, this is a bad hangover? Listen, doc, I've done something I'm not proud of.
It was fucking 5 in the morning, and then like got out of bed and got there, and everyone was like, "Yeah, Joy's on holidays this week," and I was like, "Oh my god, she is."
Sentence as well. Joy is on holidays this week.
Hello, my name is Dave Hanready, and there will be no encore. Welcome to episode 181 of the No Encore Music Podcast. This week, we'll be looking at the new album from Taylor Swift. I'll be talking to Clown from Slipknot. A clown interviewing a clown. Get your gags out early, guys.
Hey.
And various other stuff as well. Very newsy, all the kind of stuff happening. Dahi's in the studio with me.
Hey, how are you?
Hi.
Hi.
Hey. And back from New York City.
Woo!
Back from getting on his hands and knees in an art gallery or a museum.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Met.
Yeah, yeah. It's great for Patrick, everyone.
Met. Yay, I'm back. We're both back from the Americas, finally.
Yes. You had a good time?
Great, yeah, very refreshed. I love being back in New York.
This is the first time that we've all been in the same room for fucking ages.
Yeah.
Is it?
A month?
It's probably a month.
Yeah, it's about a month now.
Jesus. I hope it goes well.
Jesus, maybe we've lost it.
Hope we have some chemistry together. So it was just a standard transatlantic break, much like mine, I guess.
Yeah, it was a bit impromptu. I've been over a good few times, so didn't do much of the usual touristy stuff. Finally got into like some Brooklyn scenester stuff. I essentially turned into like a vegan jazz lover for a week. Which is close enough, but...
Is anyone surprised?
I had the best burger of my life, and it was a vegan burger.
Oh,
some amazing places in Brooklyn. Champs. It's called Champs Diner. You go in, they're like playing Way's Blood, and they're just like...
Is it like a classic diner vibe?
It's kind of got a subverted classic diner thing. It's really good. I was in the Met as well, yeah, which was hilarious because I stumbled upon the Notes on Camp exhibition. Do you remember we did that news story about like Frank Ocean and Kanye West being at the Met Gala and not being camp enough? And us being like, the actual definition of camp... So I walked into the Met and there's like all these actual definitions up, and I'm just... It's like, oh my god, we were way off. It was a great trip.
There you go.
I saw some jazz, saw some, I don't know.
Did you go to the King Crimson guitarist basement gig?
No, I didn't. I went to like the Brooklyn version of Whelan's and saw like Iggy Pop's mates. They were good. I saw Electric Youth, who did Real Hero. That was very good. Wow. That was in Williamsburg, and it was essentially like, do you remember we were joking about the Twin Peaks like revival? The fucking Roadhouse gigs were essentially like Brooklyn hipsters. I'm pretty sure it was just those extras. It was totally that vibe watching it. It was great.
I didn't really mention some of the more musical aspects of my holiday in Toronto on the last episode. Two things I probably should mention are, one, I went to see Double Bill at the Budweiser stage, which was Korn and Alice in Chains.
Wow.
Which was incredible. The venue is so weird, the amphitheater. It's like the first rows are seated and then like it goes up into the hill and then it's standing. It looks like something out of a, you'd expect, like, you know, Jim Jones to be there killing people or something. It's just really weird. But it was good crack. Both bands were smart and played the fucking hits for the most part.
Yeah.
And it was just great fun. And also, like, because it's like sponsored by Budweiser, but they're selling Budweiser, which obviously is disgusting. But Bud Light is actually okay.
Is it?
It's actually fine. It genuinely is. And they have these fucking massive 740 milliliter cans that are huge. Oh, and nice. It's like, two, please. And after two, you're just like, goosed. So yeah, but it was great. Good crack. Very much enjoyed. Some great songs by both bands. Korn still have it. I'm not going to throw them on Spotify or nothing, but it was a bit of crack.
Nice.
On top of that, though, on my last day, I went to the Royal Ontario Museum, the ROM, as they call it. And while I was there, you pay like $23 in or whatever, and it's a fucking cool museum. It has like everything. It has like fucking Tyrannosaurus Rex skeletons and everything, and just loads of cool things from all kinds of cultures.
Are you working for them now?
If you're there,
something for all the family.
if you're there, tell them Dave sent you. But so basically, while I was there, there was like they have a Rembrandt exhibition, because obviously they have limited exhibitions on here and there. And I went to walk into that, and they were like, "Oh, that's like another $8, sir." And I was like, "I think I've paid enough money here today, $23, you know." So I'm not going to go to the Rembrandt thing. And then as I was about to leave, I saw a sign on the wall that said, "It's alive. Horror memorabilia collection from Kirk Hammett of Metallica." And I was like, I wonder if that's a limited exhibition. I might just totter in, see what the story is, walk in, $8. And I was like, yeah, I'm paying the $8 and doing this.
Forget the Rembrandts, all about Kirk.
Yeah. So I went into Kirk Hammett's horror lair, which is basically like classic movie posters, clothes worn in horror movies and stuff. It's very small. Like, it's not really worth the $8, but it is cool. And yeah, so that was enjoyable. I did it for the podcast, guys. I felt like, you know, it's musical journalism.
You went for the study.
Yeah. So yeah, it was good. There were some good musical aspects to my trip. Dahi, you have announced details of your Dublin launch gig for your upcoming album, Lost.
I am. Yeah, finally. Yeah. So we're going on tour. And the Dublin gig got announced yesterday. It's the 19th of October in the Button Factory. And we're going to have full band, special guests, out the wazoo. And yeah, it's going to be great fun. All welcome.
Provided you buy a ticket, of course.
Yeah. I think early bird tickets, if you get them on Eventbrite, they're like 11 quid.
All fans of capitalism are welcome.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're also doing other gigs, yeah?
Doing Cork and Galway, and there's going to be a Belfast show announced pretty soon as well. Going out to Connolly's of Lep.
You fucking love it there.
Connolly's of Lep is incredible. And if I would almost say that if you were going to go to any show, if you wanted to make the travel, go to Connolly's of Lep.
Dublin people don't go to the Dublin gig.
Yeah, exactly. Like, well, now there's only be like 200 people at the Connolly's left one, so if you can get in there quick. But that is such a fun gig. It's so good.
Hear this guy, get in there quick. I'm gonna sell it out.
I'm also playing 200.
That's fun. It's a challenging album.
I'm also doing a Battle for the Lake Festival again in Achill, and that's a little later on as well. So all go.
Jesus, you're a fucking busy boy.
Yeah, well, sure, it's an album, you know? You have to do it.
Yeah.
Put a bit of work in.
You aren't at Electric Picnic this weekend.
I'm not. First time in 10 years.
Jesus.
Yeah, I played 9 years in a row, and I've gone 10 years.
I will be there. I'm down there for Joe, doing interviews and doing day reviews.
Cool.
I wish I wasn't going.
Ah, you'll have fun.
The weather's
meant
to be...
Once you get there, mate.
It's a serious lineup, like.
The lineup is fantastic. The weather looks pretty grim. And also, I just want to... You know me, I bitch about festivals all the fucking time.
Who are your, let's say, five acts you have to see?
That's a good question, because I did that up like for Joe, and I've also got my big list. I think Billie Eilish obviously is such a huge thing, and she's been moved from the Electric Arena to the main stage. She's on the main stage.
That's kind of a pain, to be honest.
I know, because it would have been like, don't get me wrong, it would have been impossible to get in, and you would literally have had scores of people queuing up for it, but that would have been like a story in itself, you know?
It's going to be the Dua Lipa thing all over again, like the most
100%. She's on 7:30 on Friday night, and I will be there. Dermot Kennedy, I know we bang on about a lot on this show, but like, he's on the main stage. I'm very curious to see how that will look. Hook. That's also on the Friday. Let's Eat Grandma are there. They're playing like the three stage, which is a pretty big get for the three stage.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Clashing with like fucking a lot. There's Mitski's there. You know, obviously she's talking about taking a bit of a hiatus, isn't she? So like, if that's the case, I definitely want to see her again.
Absolutely.
She was fantastic in the Tivoli when I saw her last year. An absolutely brilliant gig. I guess on the home front, the Clack are playing Body Cell Friday night. That'd be a good little buffer between Dermot Kennedy and Billie Eilish. Go see that.
The Strokes are playing me.
You're right, Craig. The 1975 are on, yes.
They're opening for the Strokes.
And then the Strokes are on afterwards. So yeah, like it is one of the things where like when you stack it up, there is a ton of shit on. I on the spot here, I'm definitely forgetting a lot of stuff. So I just hope it goes off without a hitch. 3-day festival. You know, like I'm tired, man. You know? Like I'm tired. September, I gotta detox the fuck out of my life. So next week, a picnic review from a smiling Dave Hanrady.
Are you gonna record some bits and bobs on your phone, or we won't put that on you? It's gonna be a long weekend.
No, I've my phone's battered, and I've got like a portable charger that is hopefully hanging in there as well. So I'll do my best.
We'll make do with the in person.
Other voices aren't there this year. I found surprising. They're
really,
gone. Yeah, they're not there. I mean, there's a new area,
isn't there?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's called. Haven't they moved like town or something?
No, that was last year. Or
like
the year before.
Dance
Free
stuff
town?
Somewhere. Yeah.
Free town. Yeah, and there's talk of like a big dance tent as well, which I'm interested to see.
There's talk of a big dance tent. Well, that's what I've heard.
There's tons. Like it's huge. Like it's fucking Glastonbury size now, almost like at least the Irish equivalent thereof. So I found it quite overwhelming in some respects last year. I will say that when you're working at it and you have a schedule to kind of keep to, as I do, that's actually really good because it just means that you're always moving, like you're always doing stuff, and it is exciting. Like you bump into people that you know every 5 seconds, like
of course.
Cool stuff happening, like, you know, friends of the show like Nilo and Pillow Queens are all, they're playing Salty Dog stage various different times. I'm going to go see Otherkin, by the way, my favourite band.
Oh yeah,
ever. Because you know it's like a farewell thing off. I want to see what kind of reaction they get and see how that goes. So
you should go try
lots of narratives.
If you get a chance, you're probably not going to go see Hosier, or do you have to go?
I have to go see there's a lot of acts on my, like, no one has, like, I've got full free reign here, like my editors haven't been like go see this, but obviously I'm writing for Joe, and thus you have to see the headline act. So
if you do get a chance during Hosier,
James Blake is playing, so I'll be going to see him.
As well as that, Ryan Vale is also playing with the Elma Orchestra. Okay, it's like a new big show and stuff, and I'd highly recommend seeing
yeah
that, so.
I mean, let's be honest, I'm not going to watch 90 minutes of Hosier, who Melvin Benn thinks will steal the show.
Would you watch that much of James Blake? I mean, I've seen him
bits
so many
pieces,
times now, and it's just the live thing doesn't
struggle in it.
Yeah,
I saw him on the main stage.
He'd be great in like at an Olympia or something.
Yeah, he was on the main stage of Electric Picnic one year when we were there at like 6 o'clock, and it was horrendous. Oh,
very
tepid. Sorry,
stuff.
Razor Light are on the main stage on Sunday.
Ah, come on, that would be great. I wonder will you take a shirt off.
The Sunday main stage lineup is the most oxygen thing I've seen in years. It's Dublin Gospel Choir, Riptide Movement, Razor Light, Codeline, Jerry Cinnamon, Florence and the Machine. I'm like, this is tough.
Does Johnny from Razorlight still wear the all white ensemble?
We're going to find out. Richie McCormick sent me a clip there during the week of Razorlight at Live 8 when they played, and Johnny Burrell is like, it's like a 6 second long clip, and Johnny Burrell is like, you know, it's like, give us your money or whatever. Like Bob Geldof said that. It's like blah blah blah. Like
so he quotes Bob Marley, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's like, Bob Marley
said
that.
All you need is love. Yeah,
all you need is love. John Lennon said that. John Lennon said that, and then he says like, you know. Sign the petition. I said that.
Yeah.
I was like, you're such an asshole.
Placing himself in the annals.
And then
of,
I believe what? Pete Doherty knocked him out backstage after that?
Yeah, there was a scuffle. Yeah. Pete Doherty was on like roller skates singing with Elton John. It was a mess.
What a time 2005 was. So yeah, full picnic report next week. As for this week, what's going on in the news, Craigo?
Well, I've snuck this one in. It's entitled Mystic Craig. It's actually a nice kind of conclusion to a previous episode we did, which was, what was it? Sounds of Hot Boy Summer?
Summer.
That was a fun episode where essentially Spotify had provided the world with this list of songs they thought might be the biggest of the summer. They kind of crunched the numbers. There was algorithms involved. and we kind of duked it out in terms of brackets and came up with our own number one, which turned out to be, should we spoil it? No, go back and listen to it.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, it was Bad Guy.
Advertising there.
But they've basically come out and said actually what got the most streams. They've looked at a few different kind of lists and things and figured out what was actually the biggest
song.
Surely
it's Old Town Road, right?
No, it was not. Instead, the top honours went to Senorita, song I said at the time
you
we did this episode.
Big things.
I wouldn't be surprised if this creeps up and takes over.
You did say that, yeah.
By the end of summer, yeah.
Sleeper hit, 565 million streams.
Crazy.
And that's only since like June, right?
Yeah, June 1st to August 20th.
The Fitzpatrick bump.
I know, right? Our own Bad Guy was in number two. So Lil Nas X, Billy Ray Cyrus were down to three.
the question. So this is Spotify stats as well. So it doesn't include video stats and stuff like that.
Yeah,
as well,
yeah.
Right?
I tell a lie. I Don't Care by Ed Sheeran and Justin Bieber was number two, which is just horrendous. Billie Eilish's Bad song. Guy was at number three. Apparently, a weird thing with the Lil Nas X remixes and stuff. They've all been included in the totting up of the original songs streaming.
No way.
Yeah. So every time a new remix comes out, that's counted towards the original song.
Really?
Which so never usually stupid, happens. Yeah. Like a remix is a separate
thing.
Game
in the system, Marvel
totally
Studios
is,
style.
Yeah.
Like, you know, whatever. But congratulations, Craig.
Thank you.
That
was good. It's a big win for me and Sean and Camille.
Big win in the music world this week for Harry Styles, who is currently adorning the cover of Rolling Stone magazine. And with it, a very long, very gushing profile written by Rob Sheffield, who's clearly in love with Harry Styles.
I think it's quite well written.
It is well written. But fuck me, it's, I mean, like, listen, I just interviewed clients.
He's his buddy, right?
I'm not saying you can't, can't be a fan of someone that you interview. Of course you can.
But I think they're friends, like.
But there was elements to it where I was like, this is, you're getting out of hand here,
yeah,
mate.
The Harry Hurricane, I think he used it two or three times.
Yeah, I don't know. But like, so highlights from the interview include the fact that Harry Styles did magic mushrooms and almost bit, or did bite some of his tongue off. But he seems like a very kind of chill guy.
He comes across like a nice dude.
Yeah. There's elements to the interview where I'm like, I'm a bit bored now of the whole, like, hey man, teenage girls are the future. I'm like, yeah, cool, you said that already. Say something different, mate. You know?
So he just keeps saying he talks about liking Steely Dan, though, which is kind of the other end of the spectrum.
I sent that immediately to David Tapley.
He
tweeted out
driving
Harry,
around
tweeted out Harry
LA.
Styles is a legend. It's more like, I'm not like, listen, I'm obviously on the man's side. I'm not suggesting teenage girls aren't the future. I'm just saying that, like, you know, you've kind of put out that kind of woke status before. You're just repeating yourself now, you know. And yeah, look, listen, he does a lot for a lot. He makes his gigs very inclusive. This interview flirts very hard with the idea that he might be pansexual. I personally don't care, you know, like, live your life, do what you want to do. I did think it ended very, very sweetly. There was a very, very nice moment where he goes to a Fleetwood Mac gig with his mum, and he's in like a VIP box, and the journalist is obviously there as well, and the journalist observes that he's having a great time because there's no paparazzi on him. No one's making him the focus for once. And obviously Harry Styles has become good friends with Stevie Nicks, and she's a huge part of his life now. But at one stage, you know, he goes from like bopping around, you know, kind of filling everyone's champagne glass up to when she starts playing Landslide, Stevie Nicks calls out Harry Styles, and she's like, this is from my muse, and he's here tonight with his mother. You've raised an incredible boy, like, he's an amazing gentleman and a hell of a guy for the future, blah 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 blah. And the article ends with like your man describing how at that point Harry Styles just falls silent and him and his mother hold each other close, and it's just a really nice ending. So like, there's like parts of the article I thought were very good.
Do you reckon Stevie Nicks can teach him how to write a properly good rock pop song?
Well, see,
pop,
that's
rock
actually
song.
That's a really good, I think that's a really good point, because much is made in the article about Harry Styles' affinity for classic rock. He's a big Van Morrison head, and he's surrounded himself with proper musicians and everything, but I just keep coming back to the fact that that debut album was a fucking dud. I thought the opening track had some potential in the rest of the album.
There was a few moments, but
I'm not confident that he's got an album coming. That's why this interview is here, and I'm not confident that it will be good. I think it won't be good.
It's kind of interesting. Like, I mean, the way they wrote it about him in the studio and stuff, he seems to be kind of, people seem to be kind of coming along with him and kind of recognizing that there could be something here, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I think he comes across as really well. And
he does
come across well.
And like, here's the fucked up thing.
I would have a pint with him.
Yeah, for sure. He's no Murder Capital, but here's the fucked up thing. I do like him, and as a matter of fact, you know, this is like the ultimate in pretension here, but like, you know, I've mentioned before, I'd like to write a book someday, and of course you do the stupid thing of like, I've already got the trailer for the movie version of the book. But like, honestly, honest to God, if that ever happened, and if tomorrow it was like, cool, the book is out, did really well, here's the movie, you can cast it, I would cast Harry Styles as one of the characters. That's a legitimate thing. Now, granted, it would make the press story very awkward because I gave him a really bad review for his debut album. But I see a lot in him. He was very good in Dunkirk. He's got presence. He obviously is, like I say, he's doing a lot of good things in the pop world. I just wish the music was there to back it up, and I really don't think it is. And I hope this next album proves me wrong. I don't think it will.
Well, I don't want you sidetracking him with some film project as well. He needs to focus on his music.
Listen, Craig, I'm just trying to make the best of this situation, okay?
Fallback plan.
We can all agree that the man has presence, the man has poise, the man has statement style, and does things for good in music. Someone who doesn't is Ed Sheeran. And Ed
you
Sheeran,
don't know that. that.
Well, he's been accused.
We can suspect.
He's been accused of co-opting grime, which I'm pretty sure I said when we reviewed the album.
Yeah, I think we all might have said it. Kind of surprising that it was Wiley that was saying it. I mean, you know, very outspoken dude, but he has actually collaborated with Ed Sheeran on grime tracks in the past. He's accused Ed Sheeran of being a clout chaser and a culture vulture. In a series of tweets, the rapper joked about using a guitar and foot pedal, which obviously alludes to Mr. Ed himself. Mr. Ed, he's not a horse. Mr. Sheeran said, "I'm sick of people using grime to look good for 2 minutes." I don't know if he quite looked good for 2 minutes, but that was the intention. But yeah, I mean, the grime community, well, certainly a number of prominent figures, including Stormzy, came out in defense of
Ed. Stormzy and Ed are very good friends.
Yeah, so they're good mates. Stormzy replied that, "No, Wiley, you know, Ed's been doing this from early, being a real one from early. Can't question that. You know, I love and respect your brother, but
can't
nah,
question
don't
it.
Do that."
He's infallible. Yeah, I mean, there's other Ed Sheeran news this week. First of all, he's been linked to, I don't know how true the story is, could be one of those tabloid things, but supposedly he has his eye on writing the next James Bond theme.
I think he more or less said, he's put himself out there. He said, you know, I'm available.
Come and get me.
Just, yeah, I'm enjoying my football. But yeah.
The title for that film came out. It's called No Time to Die. That's what it's called.
Really?
And in a
no
bit,
time to die.
In a bit,
just haven't any time to die at all. Just I'm rushed.
I'll
off
have
feet.
To die another day.
In a bit to get hype.
Oh, this
though,
new office work with the MI6.
I've decided to go back and rewatch the Daniel Craig James Bond era. So I've started off with Casino Royale. Obviously.
Great.
Watched the other night. I really like that film, but I will admit that giving it a rewatch there for the first time in a while, there's a lot of weird messiness to that script. Like a lot of weird situations where I'm like, why is the scene even in here? But it
and
does.
The poker
have,
doesn't work.
The poker doesn't work. It does have one of the great theme tunes, Chris Cornell. You know,
I was
my
never
name?
A fan.
What?
You know, obviously, rest in peace. But it was too kind of like American, and I like the
first American to ever sing on a Bond theme. Apparently,
yeah I don't know.
True?
It didn't work.
Dean Van Lin said it was. So
it felt like such a return to its kind of like British roots and kind of like mannered stuff. Do you know that film that it didn't quite. Like, there was talk of Amy Winehouse doing it or it being even back-to-back, which would have been incredible.
That would be class. Yeah. What did you think of Skyfall?
Skyfall, I went to see it expecting it to be amazing, and I was very let down by that. And also, there was two very annoying American children behind me in the cinema who wouldn't shut the fuck up, so that kind of ruined it. But then I went back and saw it a second time, and thought it was a lot better.
I think
Quantum of Solace is obviously not great. It was a victim of the writer's strike, and it's a bit of a messy movie. It gets a lot of hate.
It's kind of enjoyable.
It
like,
works
yeah.
totally fine if you treat it as Casino Royale 1.5, because
yes.
it starts off immediately yeah. when that film ends, and it's about an hour and a half long, which is pretty decent. And Spectre is absolute garbage.
Which is the film that it opens on the Mexican festival.
That's Spectre.
That, yeah. Spectre.
It's a bad
that
movie.
Is an excellent opening scene, though.
It's okay. It
I think it's a very good opening.
I mean, it's well shot, but like it doesn't really add anything to it, does it? And then you have
like I mean, cinematically, well, it's good, but it doesn't add much to the motion picture.
It's such a bad movie, and it's like it has
structural issues in the middle of the non-vocal.
It has Andrew Scott as do you think he's a bad guy, and it has Christoph Waltz as the architect of all your pain, James. Like, I don't know, but Christoph Waltz, man, you know, like, hello, James. Like, he's going to be in the next one as well, supposedly.
Yeah, I think he was like a one and done with fucking Inglourious Basterds, wasn't he? Yeah. Really? He's so good in that.
He's good in Django, but it's the exact same performance.
Yeah.
Did you know who's playing the villain in the next James Bond movie?
No.
I'll give you a clue. He won an Academy Award this year and shouldn't have.
I have no idea who.
Rami Malek, mate.
Really?
Oh,
that makes
yeah.
sense. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Also,
because of course we watched that clip of him like malfunctioning when he was talking about his favorite Bond
it's
film.
So funny. Yeah. He's on an American talk show, one of those ones where there's people around in the background, and like he's just been announced as being in the new Bond movie, and he's sitting there, and like Rami Malek is a strange man, so they're like, "Congratulations, Rami, you're joining the Bond franchise," and he's like, "Yeah, it's great, isn't it? I can't wait." And then they're like, "What's your favorite Bond movie?" And he just panics and freezes, and his programming shuts down for a second, and he sits there and goes. They're all great. And then he goes, Doctor No?
Doctor
and then the crowd
no?
starts cheering and he goes, Right?
Right?
Yeah, 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 Doctor No.
Okay, I'm on some here.
So Ed Sheeran might be doing the song, but he's also Craig. sad news, taking an extended break from music itself.
He's doing a BTS. I don't think he's joining the Korean army. But, yeah, it's an extended 18-month break from performing, which is fair enough. I mean, he's been on this mammoth world tour, as they say, which is the biggest grossing of all time now. I think it passed out U2.
I think he's played to 9 million people around the world.
Yeah, he did insane. A huge amount of dates. Like, he kind of gamed the system as well, whereas, like, I think U2 did a fraction of the dates he did, but obviously passed out in terms of revenue. Yeah, yeah. But there's also, he teased he might be coming back with a band. I don't know if we've more details on that.
He kind of basically said, like this is pretty much the last loop pedal, just me as a solo situation. So what he's doing is he's stealing Doughy's fucking signature here, you know?
Just very briefly on the whole Wiley thing, like going back a couple of steps. Wiley was attached to only one other news story this week, and that is that he's currently working in studio with Cheryl Cole.
Oh, really?
So, like, the fact that he's given out about Ed Sheeran, like, using Grime to move on, and now is, like, working with Cheryl Cole, who's obviously trying to get her waxwork back up.
I was going to say, yeah. it was removed because Grime. She's no longer relevant.
Yeah, she wants to get put in the Grime section of Madame Sans.
Incredible.
Zara Hedman got very good reviews for her Cheryl Cole impression on the show last
week. Unbelievable, yeah.
Craig, blast through this David Byrne thing, because I want to hear about the VMAs.
Sure, yeah. So David Byrne has announced that he's launched a new online magazine. It's called Reasons to be Cheerful. It's a solutions orientated online magazine. It's going to publish stories detailing real changes with measurable impact that are meant to inspire and uplift. So it's kind of a feel-good story. He's released a statement saying, "It often seems as if the world is going straight to hell," which is true. "I wake up in the morning, I look at the paper, and I say to myself, 'Oh no,'" which could be a Talking Heads lyric. So he talks about how he's, you know, felt depressed and perilous, but that doesn't accomplish anything. So the kind of whole point behind this is, like, positive news. Like, what's in the good news? We'll just get the word out about activism and stuff. And I think it's nice that David Byrne is out there being positive.
That's good.
The site is interesting. So it's currently has a website, and he has actually written a good lot of the articles. And also Brian Eno has written one or two of the records.
Yeah, old Serapus.
Old Serapus.
Okay, so our final news story of the week is going to be a roundup of the MTV Video Music Awards. Now, I believe lowest ratings in history, down year on year. Now, when I saw that you were putting this together, Craig, in the running order, I deliberately didn't look at things. So I don't know who won what.
Yeah, well,
it turns out it doesn't matter.
Yeah, they really didn't care. I didn't actually write up the story because, like, who could be bothered watching it? But there was a really good kind of 10 things you might as well know about the VMAs, which was titled.
I guess the first question is, did either of you watch it at all?
No. It's not really.
But the strange thing about it this year, and one of the kind of the major takeaways, is that they barely included any of the actual award giving. It was all based down to performances, which I think makes a lot of sense, because the VMAs are, and I mean, loads of people have said this, but it is the most pointless award show of all time, because Video Music Awards get nominated to artists who didn't make the videos, and nobody mentions the people who actually created the stuff.
Total sham. Yeah, so they got rid of the Video of the Year and the Song of the Year gongs in the middle of the telecast. There was still like an hour and a half left. The winners of those, Taylor Swift took home Video of the Year for You Need to Calm Down. Lil Nas X and Billy Ray Cyrus won Song of the Year for their eternal Old Town Road remix, apparently. Missy Elliott won Video Vanguard, which, did they drop the Michael Jackson name from that? I believe they might have. She's very deserving of that. I'll probably go back and check out. She did a medley of her biggest hits, probably
it was
awesome.
It was a huge amount of production as well. It almost felt like a Super Bowl show or something like that. It was crazy.
Yeah. And was there anything else really of interest?
Like, a lot of the stuff was weird. Like, Ariana Grande weren't one Artist of the Year, but wasn't there at all, which is kind of quite a strange thing, because generally it was kind of public knowledge almost that if you were nominated for VMAs and actually went, then there was a very good chance that you were going to win, because they only gave it to people who were actually there.
Yeah, there wasn't any overlap with her Manchester show, was there, possibly? I don't know. It makes sense that she would. That would be one thing she wouldn't want to miss.
It's pretty much a popularity contest and a reflection of what is currently hot and popular. Like, I mean, there's not really any outliers, I don't think.
Not really. Taylor Swift also won Video for Good. That's a category because it's like, I don't know, social change or whatever. It's rewarding social change. Best Power Anthem is also a category. Megan the Stallion featuring Nicki Minaj and Ty Dolla $ign won for Hot Girl Summer, which, yeah, should be rewarded in some way.
Rock, Panic at the Disco. Tells you all you
need
to know.
Let's move on.
There you go.
Better rock.
Yeah, let's move on.
I should say as well that John Travolta went to award Taylor Swift the show, Taylor Swift an award, and gave it to the wrong person, basically. At one point, he like handed it to somebody else who vaguely looked like Taylor Swift.
It was a drag queen, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a drag queen.
But in the video, she's dressed up as Taylor in a lookalike competition. It was, and everything as well.
It wasn't quite as bad as Adele, does he? The wickedly talented one and only Adele.
Are you guys aware of John Travolta's new movie? Like, he's hit the Nicolas Cage stage of career.
I thought you were going to say new hair.
Well, he's actually, like, I saw him on a talk show, and he, or maybe he was on this as well. He didn't have any hair, and I was like, finally, about fucking
embracing
time, John.
His scalp.
He's hit the Nicolas Cage stage of his career of just having terrible straight to video stuff or straight to streaming stuff or whatever. His new film is called The Fanatic, okay? And it's about an autograph hunter, or like a celebrity-obsessed guy who... the film doesn't make this clear, but appears to be on the spectrum, which is really fucking problematic, by the way. But also, he's playing it really, like, broadly. I know, shocking, John Travolta, right? He looks bizarre in it. And the guy he's obsessed with is Devon Sawa, who was in Final Destination and, of course, the video for Stan by Eminem. So there's been a meta commentary going on there. Apparently, it's a really gross movie, and, like, it's really violent and disgusting. He kidnaps the guy and, like, tortures him. It's directed by Fred Durst. So there
burying
you go.
The lead.
It's called The Fanatic, and I will be watching it because, you know, for the podcast. Maybe a no popcorn episode. Almost definitely a no popcorn episode. Let's talk about some good rock music, shall we? As noted before, I had the chance to interview M. Sean Crahan, also known as Clown from Slipknot, who, of course, on the day this episode drops, tickets are out for their Dublin show. I presume it's going to sell out pretty fast. They're playing Ireland in January. Cannot wait. I'm bringing Dai, his first ever Slipknot gig. It's going to be really good. I talked to Clown for a bit. And,
this is a really good interview. He's a quote machine.
He fucking is, because I only had 20 minutes on the phone. You always panic about that kind of stuff, but it was said in advance. That's literally what the PR said. They were like, he's a quote machine, don't worry. And I've read interviews with him over the year to know that the guy can just go. But because you've edited it, Dai, you've done a very nice job on it. So what did you think?
Yeah, I really, really liked it. I mean, he sounds like somebody who has been through the mill for years and years and years. He really understands why he's doing what he's doing, which is often quite rare. Like, you know, like it feels like he's really, really thought about who he is, why Slipknot are who they are, and why they're still doing it, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and the new album, honestly, like I know I'm a fan, but like this is legitimately their best album in a very long time. I think it's excellent, and I'm very heartened by seeing people's positive reactions. A couple of insights into the interview, though. I was told in advance that I couldn't ask about three things. I couldn't ask about the new member of Slipknot, because there's a new guy that they haven't announced who it is. He's replacing a guy who left because he's suing the band based on financial disputes. Wasn't allowed to ask about that either, and I wasn't going to, in fairness. And also, very sadly, Clown's youngest daughter passed away in May, and you know, obviously that was announced, and I was surprised that he was even doing press. And it was like,
he was even doing tours.
Yeah,
it's very shocking. Yeah, I mean, like, I guess it's, I don't know, I mean, like, maybe it's a way of dealing, but it was very much like, if you ask about this subject, we will hang up the phone. And I was like, no problem, I'm not going to, don't worry. So I didn't ask that, obviously. But there is a moment in this where he talks about, like, you know, losing people in his life, and I didn't press him on or nothing, but like it was just interesting to kind of hear him reflect on that briefly, and maybe it was about something else, but a very contemplative guy. And lastly, what I will say is there's a moment in this interview when I described him as the conscience of the band, and he thought I said the word consciousness. However, they kind of mean the same thing, and I'm going to take it. Anyway, without further ado, here's me and Teenage Dave, very, very happy about this, obviously, talking to Clown from Slipknot. Enjoy.
Hi everyone, Clown is on the line.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hi, is that Clown?
It is.
Hey man, how's it going? This is Dave Hanratty in Dublin. How are you today?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm not too bad. We're having a very humid summer over here, and I'm kind of sick of it at this stage, if I'm honest with you.
That's good for your skin.
So I'm told. I hope so. I have spent the last week or so listening to the new album, though, so that has definitely eased things somewhat. Congratulations on it. I think it's fucking brilliant. Welcome back, basically.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you.
I guess the first thing I want to ask you is, 20 years on from an incredible breakthrough with the self-titled album, how do you regard Slipknot's place in the world today?
Well, I think about this a lot. You're an artist, a performer, a musician, you get in this racket, there's no manual, and then you have to abide by a system that's already been laid out decades before your entrance. So I just look at myself on life's journey. I just think we're doing exactly what we did when we started a band. We got together to make music, be together, feel that connection of live interaction, and you know, musicians play together and that magic happens. And we're just getting better and living our lives and accepting our ages and accepting the environment around us and just still, you know, I never look at it in any other way than this is my life. So what else am I going to do? You know, this is what I do. This is who I am. So instead of degressing into something that doesn't make sense, I challenge myself, and I believe we challenge ourselves to the harder things in life, which is to evolve, which is to take chances, which is to allow what is inside.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be, it's difficult to imagine you doing anything else at this stage, I think.
Well, we're always the band that everybody wants to hate. And, you know, it's, at this point, I mean, I don't really give it any mind. I mean, what I used to care about and what used to bother me and the angst that used to get on me, it's just irrelevant at this point. Like, we're just on a journey called Slipknot. And really, there's nothing else or nobody else. And this is what we do. What else would Slipknot do? I mean, this is what we do.
Do you still feel hated by people? And if so, who are those people and what level are we talking about here?
Well, I don't, you know, because I've changed so much, I don't really need to, like, talk about it. You know, it's just you see it. What little bit I get on the internet and what little bit I'll subscribe to, you know, you just see it and you feel it and you can hear it in condescending ways. And you know, you can look around at the change in, like, music. You know, I'm just dumbfounded all the time. But I'm more concerned about myself and the band I'm in to worry about any of that. I'm trying to be selfless. So, you know, every human's got their own path. I don't want to spend any time being snagged up on somebody else's decisions.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about your own specific position within the band. I mean, from a fan of many years now, I've kind of always looked at Clown as kind of the conscience of the band. But again, I'm not in the band, so I don't necessarily know how fair that would be. But in terms of your own role and how it's evolved over the years, how do you regard yourself?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'll start by saying I'm the clown, and that comes with a lot. I'm very blessed to have been allowed to be myself, which is create art and suggest art and deliver art. I am the oldest, and at this point, if you were looking at the timeline, you know, I'm the OG, so to speak. So there probably is a consciousness there. There probably is a mindset there. It doesn't mean that people buy into it. It doesn't mean I force it. But I do believe that there is a certain conceptual sense that lingers around me that I enforce. But like I said, I'm very, very lucky person to be in an establishment that is allowed to, you know, utilize my gifts, I guess. I have more of a voice now than I ever did, and I have the voice from the beginning. But I've just had a lot of great peers, a lot of great teachers, a lot of artistic people around me, you know, opening my head to possibility, helping me, you know, activate my ideas. So I think there's a lot of clown right now. I think this is the most I've ever worked for anything with this album. I've gained the most and I've lost the most. I don't mean that for the other guys. I'm just saying as a human, I've gained so much from this album and I've lost so much. And that's where I'm at. So there's a lot of clown all over this and these days. I'm just a much better person. And I'm much more aware. I like the word you use, consciousness. I do believe, yeah, I do believe there is a heavy consciousness of clown.
In that regard, though, you say you've gained a lot, you've lost a lot. Obviously, it must take an awful lot of work and an awful lot of the self to go into an album like this, and every Slipknot album, I think, would be the case. Is it worth it? Like, is the balance worth it?
I don't know, because life is random and circumstantial, and you wake up and you open your eyes and you have no idea what is there waiting for you. Who has died? Who has been born? Who has quit? Who is next in line? What I've lost, what I've gained, where I'm going, where I've been. I mean, every day is this constant reminder of this thing called life. And at this point, I'm 20 years in this thing called Slipknot. I would have never guessed, but it is what I wanted to do from the beginning. And I keep continuing to do it. Worth it, I don't know if that's even a really good concept, because I just do what I do. I don't care about the things that people might think I care about. So I'm just getting up, trying to live every day. Do I love Slipknot more than life itself? So I guess, yeah, you know, of course it's worth it. But that's a harder... That seems like being worth it seems easy. Where I'm at in all this is like next level in a life lived with it. Lots of sacrifice, lots of work, lots of loss. So it's a lot.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff in the records as well, of course, that reflect that. And I mean, I've always thought of Slipknot as a reaction to life and to the world around Slipknot as well, and around us every single day. How informed by the world are you, especially on this record?
Well, that's a great question, because that is one of the ingredients in making an album. You know, you have to make an album, go out on an album cycle for many years, get twisted, get torn, you know, physically, mentally, spiritually. Finalize that thought process. Go home. 6 months of body repair. 6 more months, equaling a year of just mental and body repair. Then you get about 6 months to yourself, but then you usually generally get bored in about a year and a half. If you can stretch that to about 2 years, you're doing really well, you know? So in that 2 years, I spent a lot of time in the world. Not so much on the internet or on the TV or on the radio, but just around people in general. I take trips, business and pleasure. So I'm around people on both of those in different kinds of circumstances. But the people I choose to be around, the people that choose to be around me, they speak. And that's where I get my communication, one-on-one or in a group. And then it turns into speaking about what is going on in the world. And that's where I get informed. And that's where I engage. So I think I'm pretty aware. I think the world I live in is pretty obscure and pretty minuscule. But I check in to the bigger things, because I don't want to be ignorant. I don't want to be naive. And I don't want to be naive either to what's going on. So, but I like what you said, because, you know, people always have said that they love the album Iowa. And I've always said the reason why that is where the world was at in 2001. I mean, it's just the world was in a real place. Everybody can go back to that time and honestly say they felt it. And honestly, it's exactly like that right now. And, you know, Slipknot's got to make an album sometime. So it's interesting that we do make albums at pivotal times in history, because you can feel the world where it's at. And if you apply our album to the world, then you understand the album more.
On that note, and to ask a very broad question, are we doomed?
Oh, man. Let me give you a scenario, okay? You may not like this. But have you ever got up and had that sort of cliche sort of subject matter that's been brought in all our heads about life being your own movie. Like, you get up and you swear to God that it's some sort of weird program movie that just revolves around you. You know, you've had that, right?
Yeah, of course.
So wouldn't it just be obvious that you get to see the end? And what would you do if you saw the end? You know, would you invite it openly with open eyes so you could move forward through it? Or would you, you know, would you cover your eyes and bend over and not want to take it and then possibly lose a chance? But these are all just thoughts. I mean, we don't know what's real, what's not. So the world that I live in, it just seems very irritated, and that bothers me. You know, I go to an airport, I go to any place of travel, and the travel has gone quite a bit in the irrational kind of way. Things are late, no one gives a fuck, things have gotten worse, and, you know, in my opinion, service and quality and expense. And then you got every human that's feeling that and having to deal with that. And we're generally not very good being calm. We generally go for ourselves, creating a very sporadic reaction. And I feel like every time I leave a hotel or my house, I got to remind myself that I'm living in a very sporadic, I don't know, the world is in a very strange place in my eyes. And scary. Definitely is scary. You know, you don't want to wake up and hear that major decision that other people that aren't even in your family have made for all of us. You know, it's getting to be a little much yet. Are we doomed? Hey, life always finds a way. You know, I know that's probably the dumbest thing you've ever heard, but I know that when we're all gone, some flower will bloom eventually, and it's proven to do so. And even if this world blows up, supposedly there's other worlds growing. So I don't know really what's most important in life. I think it's just to live it, you know, just live life, because it is a bizarre experience.
No, I like that, man. I agree with a lot of it. You've said before that there's an awful lot of love. There's a lot of love in Slipknot's music. And do you think some people were surprised by that idea?
I'm absolutely positive people are surprised, but people forget that they're human. So imagine a 14-year-old kid, girl or boy, entering high school, looking for their social scene, social acceptance. Maybe the boy paints his nails, grows his bangs, wears really intense T-shirts by bands that he actually gravitates to at the moment. But he still loves his grandma, okay? He still got a dog or a pet that he would die for or she would die for. We forget all these things. We get narrow-minded and think just because we wear all black that we are all black, you know, like our thoughts and our mind and the anger and this and that and heavy, aggressive music and these sorts of things. And it can be a big part of us, but we forget that there's all the other stuff. Like, when you cry, it feels good. So why don't you cry? You know, maybe you want to be tough for a while and you don't want to cry, but the point is when you do cry, it feels good. So I think people are surprised, but I think once they let it in, because it's us, then they're like, wait a minute, this is perfectly natural. What I'm hearing and what I'm experiencing is exactly what I expect from Slipknot. So I think at first, yes, because everybody wants heavy. But what is the definition of heavy? You know, you take some of the songs on the new album, they're emotionally heavy. And yes, they will surprise people. But like I said, many listens and a deep breath, then the acknowledgement comes that it's exactly what you would expect and exactly what you want. And most importantly, what you need.
I guess lastly, what I'll ask you, because I know you're tight for time, would be, you mentioned earlier that you were kind of dumbfounded by, I guess, the state of music today. What exactly did you mean by that?
Well, I always feel that everybody, every day, can change their own destiny at any moment. And so you know, I just, everything seems so, I don't know, so predictable. Like even the greats, even some of the elite, I'm just like bored. I mean, majorly bored because there's a scramble there. Everybody's scrambling. You know, we've all been taught that change is good. You know, we're going from physical product to streaming. You know, people got to understand what the word algorithm means. And, you know, next thing you know, you're subscribed to like four streaming facilities that all provide you the same movie that you bought four times. I mean, it's a confusing time, the phone, the digital world, the internet. But music is really taking it hard because, you know, there's a lot of reasons we could talk for hours, but, you know, record labels, I mean, I could talk a day about that, you know, record deals and just the way things are being done and the way things used to be done. But like I said, we've all been taught that you have to go with change. If you don't go with change, you get left behind. We know this. But I can tell you music is taking a big hit because of the business of it. And the business is concentrated on the digital space, the viral space. And it's really messing things up. But it's only right now. You know, it's 10 years for a hypothesis to happen. So unfortunately, you and I are living in an era where we got to put up with these sort of irritating things that are going on that will affect the one thing we love most. For me, it's God music. And I just, the quality is not there. You got to look deep. And then even when you find it, it's compared too much to the great stuff that was a long time ago that you find yourself just sticking with. And it's because it was a much more passionate, much more unknown territory, rock and roll. And now it seems like subcategory, it's cut up, it's sliced. You can have a fraction or all of it or none of it or some of it. You know, it's different. But it'll work its way out.
Well, look, I think you've made a great album, and I just want to say thanks for it, and thanks for all the music over the last 20 years. I've been a fan for the entire time. Slipknot mean an awful lot to me, and I'm really, really glad that I got to talk to you today. So thank you very much, and best luck with everything.
Oh, we appreciate it. I appreciate your time today. I'd just like to say thank you to all the Maggots, because as you have said, you are one. Everybody sticks with us, and we love it. We're family. It's what matters. We're having a great time out on tour. Can't wait to see everybody as soon as we can. So thank you. We hope you enjoy the album. Thank you. Be careful. See you soon. All right. Cheers. Bye. What's that?
That was a clown interviewing a clown. There we go. I made the joke again because it's funny.
It's not funny. It's not. It's not even close to being funny.
All right, fine. Just trying to have my fun. But that was a great one. I really enjoyed it. Much more to come on the interview front, of course. But first, songs of this week. Busy week for once, guys. Lots of stuff happening.
Yeah, there was a lot happening.
Well, there was kind of like some cut-ins, cut-outs, you know?
Yeah, I suppose there was.
I enjoyed the Bombay Bicycle Club return.
Not enough.
Apparently. Yeah, not enough.
Yeah, I mean, I had that down on my list, but I found that it was not interesting enough to warrant a conversation.
Well, dare not, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, good to have them back, though.
Good to have them back. Yeah, yeah.
Let's start with a band and a
more
song.
The song itself.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
That is interesting enough. It's the 1975, and it's not about climate change this time. It's called People. Sounds like this. It sounds like a lot of rock songs, I would say. A very big Marilyn Manson vibe off this one.
Huge, yeah.
So this is them pivoting, obviously, to kind of a more of a, I guess, idol, Queens of the Stone Age. Marilyn Manson, straight up rocker. Matty Healy is screaming his head off. Some people have rejected this wholesale. They think that they're kind of being a bit touristy on this one. I think it's a bit of a bop. Dotty O'Droney.
Is it a once-off, do you think?
I don't know. That's a good question. Yeah.
I think it probably is.
Yeah, I feel like it is.
There is an album coming in February.
I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it. I didn't obviously, like most people, I probably wouldn't have expected it to go as hard as it did. I think the video is really, really effective with it as well. Really, really interested to see what's going to kind of come up now, yeah, because it does feel like a once-off to me, and that if this is part of an album, it is.
Would you want an entire album of this style?
Absolutely not, no. No, not at all. I mean, it was good on like one interesting run of it, but like, I don't know, there's not enough elements there to make this like a full album kind of thing. There's not enough textures and elements.
Yeah, and the thing I will say about it, I guess the criticism I would have with this track, I do like it, is that I've heard it before.
But yeah,
like, right, we've much heard this song before. Yeah. They're doing a pretty good version of it.
So if it is part of an overriding thing in an album, it might be really fucking cool. But like,
yeah, it'll kind of depend where it sits.
Andrea Cleary on the 909 podcast speculated that maybe they're going to try and inhabit a different genre for each track.
Yeah, see, that might be
interesting. It's the kind of thing that they would do.
Yeah, that sounds tiring to me. I was kind of into this for the first verse. I think they duck like a big cathartic chorus moment. Like, I kind of like what he's doing vocally, the kind of strangled things. It's, you know, people have been saying, oh my god, the 1975 have gone screamo. It's like, no, it's kind of fairly basic rock.
It's and still then, a pop song at the
then
end of
when
the day.
Yeah, when you get to that chorus, it goes into what sounded to me like fucking some Black Keys riffage or something, which was quite lumpen, actually. It wasn't that inspired. I do like what he's doing on the verses. But yeah, it's them kind of in tourist mode.
It is, yeah. I don't think it's revolutionary. It's them kind of playing dress up a bit. They're doing it well because they are very good at production. They are very good at packaging. They are very good at kind of creating a thing. But it's not like this is your identity. I know they're a band that likes to change their identity, but this ain't it. But I do like it. So there we go. Craig, you had one Pusha T song and you swapped it out for a different one.
Yeah, King Push is spoiling us. I initially had Sociopath and now I have this. The 80s kingpins got a freedom. All these faces they ain't believing. If no child's left, then how can when we leave them? Gone, you hold on to anything. Some do wrong just to feel anything. But when the voice feels. That was Coming Home by Pusha T, Kanye on production, and Lauryn Hill singing.
Lauryn Hill.
Not a sample or nothing. It does sound like it's a really poor recording of her. It's like an MP3 kind of stitched in. But we'll take what we can get.
Could you just sing it really quickly into this
camera? So I think actually an unfinished version of this leaked along with Sociopath, and Push is kind of trying to clean stuff up and get out proper versions. Now, he has promised there's going to be like a 9-track fully Kanye produced album to follow. I don't know. Pusha T says stuff sometimes. Sociopath was really interesting to me because it seemed like a return to prior to Daytona form. Like, it was that kind of sparse, metallic, quite harsh numbers on the board thing. It knocked really hard for me. This, though, when this popped up last night, I was very excited. I think this is what we were hoping for with Kanye's Brothers, which was like done for a BET show.
Yeah,
it's like,
he's going
old school. This is actually very, very good. Like, the sample
is a real classic old school
so,
kind of
like insanely like, yeah. So I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Pusha just kills it. Like, he's, you know, Complex voted him the greatest rapper alive for last year, and he's like, his run of features this year has been great. His own stuff is fantastic. He just doesn't really miss. It's good to hear Lauryn Hill back as well.
She sounds really good in this. Does. The whole presentation is fantastic. I like Sociopath a lot as well. I love the bit where it cuts off and they talk about charcuteries.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I just found that so funny, and I'm not really one for skits, especially ones that like interrupt a song, but I just thought every time I hear that I just laugh. I think it's hilarious. Listen, I mean, Kanye West on production mode can often be very impressive, and it is here. It's a really wholesome song. Like, I felt really
in the right way,
and that really kind of jarred me in a really weird way, because it was just like Pusha T doing this type of a
really
track.
Good at it.
I was just really confused. I was just like, what? And I was just like, maybe he's not gonna like say anything about it. And then he mentions like, there's a kingpin or whatever. Damn it! Yeah.
But like he opens the song with just saying, you know, fuck it, we're all poor. I'm like, that's the first relatable Pusha T line I've ever heard. But yeah, like, I think, you know, it's very wholesome sounding. I think Pusha then delivering the verses, he lends the kind of, you know, non-cliche details that actually take it away from just being a feel-good gospel thing. Do you know what I mean?
So
I think it's maybe the best Chance the Rapper song of the year.
Oh, did you see he was on some show and it was like the guy... Chance was on some show. I think it was Ebro. And it was something like your man had done like the top 50 rappers in the world right now. Or was it of all time?
Of all time, yeah.
And Chance the Rapper was like, I think he was low down on the list or not on the list, and he was really affronted by this. And he basically said to him, he was like, he goes, I know I'm in the top five, and I'm definitely not number five. It's like, you cannot handle any criticism whatsoever. He's fuck Chance the Rapper.
Now, I will say, in fairness,
are these two tracks are these cast offs from Daytona? Like they both are they?
I believe they had the samples originated from those sessions, and they've been worked on since. Okay. So, as Pusha tells it, there's going to be a further seven new songs coming along with these.
Okay, I'm in.
Yeah,
yeah,
very much so.
Amazing.
They're so good together.
Yes, Dahi.
So the track I brought this week is A.G. Cook is back with a track called Lifeline.
I tell you, hook that bass drum to my veins. Yeah. But you could probably keep the rest.
Do you think?
Knew that was going.
It's just not really...
So anybody who doesn't know who A.G. Cook is, he's credited as the producer and kind of A&R guy for a label called PC Music, which most people kind of know what PC Music is at this stage. It's kind of like a very hyper, like over the top, really, really intense pop music. Mm. Very, very shiny, very, very clean. A.G. Cook is also the creative director for Charlie XCX, and he's basically credited it with her, like her lean into this kind of PC Music style and stuff. And one of the more interesting things about this track is that it could very well be a Charlie XCX track if she was singing on it, which kind of worries me in a sense, because A.G. Cook had this like really, really unique style like a good few years ago now that was like very, very high, very fast tempo, very, very interesting kind of stuff. And this is... he's obviously developed alongside Charlie XCX in what kind of PC Music technically is right now. But the problem is that has his style now just like run in beside Charlie XCX's and is the exact same. Like, he's a really interesting dude and is really worth looking up. You know, when he started PC Music, he had this amazing kind of team where he wanted to record people who wouldn't usually make music, but record them and treat them as if they were major label artists. So like people who wouldn't necessarily be an incredibly great artist of all time, but he was like, well, what if we just did all of the attention that we usually give to like a star and make them.
I mean, it doesn't sound like a good idea.
It doesn't sound like a good idea at all. But that's what makes PC Music so interesting as well, I think. It's like it kind of feels so off and off kilter, but everything is so clean and crisp.
It's like that Uncanny Valley thing going on. Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, this is fine. It's just a bit lightweight for me, Craig.
Yeah, I think like the most surprising thing was how unsurprising this was. It was just like, oh, if you had a typical kind of... like the production is immaculate, obviously.
It's surprising that he starts with this one, because apparently there's going to be a whole pile of new PC Music
talking about this as like his big power ballad. It's quite 80s, and like that hook, he's like, I had it stuck in my head for ages. I'm like, it's not that strong a hook, really.
No,
particularly with his vocals. Like, Charlie might make something of it, but yeah, I want him on the bleeding edge and just doing that hyper stuff.
Hey guys.
Hey.
I just got sent the new Lana Del Rey album by the record label 4 hours before it comes out for everyone else. What's the point? That's out next week, as is the new Tool album, their first in 13 years. That's the one that we're going to be reviewing on this show.
Yeah.
Do you want to do a toss up now?
I don't. No. But
I'm excited about the music of Tool, but I'm not sure Maynard is as talented as Lana at this point. We'll see.
So you would rather that she was fronting Tool, basically?
Yes,
what you're saying.
That is the album
that
I want to hear.
Dahi, you could always cut up both albums and just try and like make one super album.
I could. I absolutely could. Yeah.
Okay.
That was very partridge. I love it. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Moving on.
Yeah, Norman.
Good banter.
Norman fucking Rockwell Fear Inoculum. Like, why not? But first, there's a big album to talk about anyway.
Yes.
It's one of the big albums of the year, one of the big albums of the summer, a big pop album. It's by a lady by the name of Taylor Swift. It's called Lover. Let's take a listen to it and then talk about it. Stories from uni and the West End. You can find me in the pub, we are watching rugby with your school friends. God, I love the English. You know I love a London boy. I enjoy nights in Brixton. Shoreditch in the afternoon. He likes my American smile like a child when our eyes meet. Darling, I fancy you. So that was London Boy by Taylor Swift, a track that became infamous by the virtue of its strangely geographical head-scratching lyrics before anyone even heard the track. Craig, before we get into the album itself, can you tell us some background about this Taylor Swift character?
Oh, really? I'm the one that has to talk a little bit better. Okay. I think she's originally like Midwest singer-songwriter who logically moved to Nashville. She spent like her 20s and like the last decade essentially being a massive star due to her like great songwriting talent. I think Speak Now topped the US charts. It was completely self-written. Then you had the likes of Red, which was like put her into the pop realm, 1989, which kind of made her dominate the pop realm. And then Reputation, which I wasn't here to review, and I'm glad I wasn't. Okay. Oh, and also Kanye West said she didn't have the greatest video of all time. But true. He did let yeah. it finish.
So essentially, like, obviously on this show every week, I always go to you for a primer. Maybe yeah. maybe this week I could have skipped you because, of course, we have a special guest helping us review this album, and it is Alice Kiernan. Hello.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show.
Your official Taylor Swift correspondent.
Yeah. We've shipped in.
Yeah. So did you go to both Croke Park gigs last year?
I did. Right. Okay. I paid for my first ticket as I'm a big fan. So did the whole thing.
You paid?
I think I'm like the only person in the country who did. But I paid for my first for the first night, whatever. And then the second, was anyone here at it?
No. I could hear it. I was around the vicinity.
You could feel it.
I could feel it.
It was great. So then the second night, my friend was like, "Well, we just wait around outside and see what happens." And I was like, "Abso-frickin-lutely!" Like, so we went and we didn't think we were going to get tickets. And then someone was like, this woman with her kid was like, "Are you guys looking for tickets?" And we're like, yeah. And then she's like, "Well, I bought these, but I won these, so you can have these ones." And then all of a sudden I was like, "I'm going to see my idol twice in the space of 24 hours. Like, how did this happen?"
That's incredible.
I went to both nights. Okay. And I am very proud of that.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, I've kind of been... Alice and I work together, and I've, you know, been threatening to get you on the podcast for some time, and I've very much been saying a case of, let's not, you know, like, you need to be impartial here. Like, but this album came out, and I believe you said that you tried to take the day off work to listen to it fully.
I didn't actually try to... Please don't tell people I tried to take the day off work. I'm sure, like, my boss is listening and be like, she what?
Yeah, you were sick, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I would love to dedicate a day to listening to the album, but unfortunately I had to.
Well, this is an important record, I think, for Taylor Swift fans, especially because Reputation came off the back of a lot of controversy, and this is obviously a bit more wholesome. Alice, let me ask you this. I mean, like, the lead up to this record, what's the general feeling in the Swift camp, the Swifty camp, I should say?
Okay, so she disappeared for a very long time after 1989. It was like her most popular album, but also it was when a lot of drama happened. So she disappeared for a very long time. When she came back for Reputation, she deleted everything from social media and also did zero media interviews. So all she had was the album, and she gigged on a Friday and a Saturday night. There was like, it was a very well planned and maybe calm tour. I don't know. Like, it just, there wasn't, she didn't hype it up herself. She just, it was going to release my album, going to do my gigs, and that's that. And then in the space of 2 years, she announced Reputation, toured her Reputation, and then wrote Lover and has released Lover. So that's like, to go from like disappearing for like 4 years to having two albums in 2 years is like massive. And I think I liked Reputation, but I think the fans were quite shocked by it. Like, it was so out of character, and even just like the colour scheme. Do you know? Like, yeah, it was just...
It was such a right turn.
Like, yeah, it was just like... And I think, I remember when I heard the lyrics... old Taylor can't come to the throne right now because she's dead. I was like, what is going on?
I think we all
what is going on? Like, I don't want you to be dead. Like, what
because
are you doing? And I was just like, I was kind of nervous for that album to come out. I was like, please don't do it. Like, I've defended you my whole life. Please. So then when a pastel theme came back, even on her Instagram for Lover, I think everyone kind of had a sigh of relief.
Huge sigh of relief. Yeah. Okay. I guess final credentials-based question for you before we dive into this. Because as you know, you defended her all your life. You're a huge Taylor Swift fan. Do you find it difficult to defend her? Because, like, my whole thing is that I find it difficult to warm to her as a person. And I find it difficult to get past the whole machine, the whole gloss. I guess for a fan like yourself, that's probably not in the way so much. But, like, do you have this kind of conflict of interest there sometimes, maybe?
I have, like, here I've written down that, like, her dedication to keep her fans interested is, like, something I've never seen before. So, like, even if someone, like, even though you guys might not notice it, like, for me, it's, like, there's nods to everything in her songs and in her music videos and in her Instagram posts that only like a really dedicated fan would recognize.
So it's like a fan service.
Yeah. Like, so it's like, it's almost like she doesn't care about what the non-fans think because her actual fans are so dedicated that it's like, I mean, she sells out like
So like she's
arena.
Solidifying her base like Trump, for example.
I'm sorry.
I think there's celebrity drama everywhere, and I like that whole Kanye, Kim, Katy Perry stuff. Like, even I was like, "What is on? Like, what is on?" I don't care anymore. No one cares anymore. Like, no one actually cares anymore. Do you know what I mean? And I do think then she was in a difficult situation whereby, I don't know, they were all tweeting stuff, but she was taking a social media, like she wasn't tweeting, or like she avoided interviews for 5 years. So like, how can you defend yourself if you're not doing interviews and stuff like that? So it was just a hot mess, really.
It's exhausting.
It's exhausting.
It is exhausting.
But I think as well, I think like for me, I'm just like, but if you listen, like she has a song called All Too Well. And it's like 6 minutes long, and like the lyrics in it are unbelievable. And it like bothers me that someone's like, oh, yeah, but like that Kim Kardashian. And I'm like, but like she's an unbelievable songwriter. Like, I don't care about any of that. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Let's find out how unbelievable her songwriting is, because I'm gonna open it to the room now, especially because actually, I've just copped that neither of you have reviewed a Taylor Swift album on the show before because you were away. You weren't a full time member.
That's right.
Dawg, you're a big pop album guy.
Yeah.
Where does this rank for you?
So like Taylor Swift has kind of always been a strange one for me as well, because I would say that I was never able, a bit like Dave, I wasn't able to grab a kind of a very clear kind of identity. And it feels to me like there seems to be a continuous thing throughout Taylor's career where it feels like she changes up kind of how she's feeling and how she's kind of talking about herself kind of consistently, almost from song to song. And that was one of the hardest things getting into this album as well for me, was that obviously it's quite a long album. It's like, what is it, 18 tracks long, I think?
Mm-hmm.
And it has a very strange thing where there's kind of like, I Forgot That You Exist, it opens up and it has this like really cool kind of like attitude kind of thing where she's kind of, it's like a real kind of a sassy kind of comeback.
And it isn't love, it isn't hate, it's just indifference.
Yeah, exactly. And it's got this like real
my
cool, and
I was like
okay, cool, okay, so this is the type of thing that we're going to get through. And then just throughout the album, or as it goes along, she has like appealed to such a massive wide kind of slew of audience and styles and people that I found it hard to grasp kind of like both who Taylor is as a character just based on her music and like what she's trying to say in one entire album. Because the big problem, and I think you've kind of touched on it, is that people judge Taylor based on the drama that's around the actual thing. And 90% of the time I find that the pop musicians that I really, really like, you're able to tell just from their music who they are and what they're trying to say. That was my biggest problem with this album, is that like there seems to be like a continuous thing where it feels like I don't know who she is, if you know what I mean. And that being said, like, I think there's a couple of really, really good tracks, and I think there's a couple of really, really bad tracks, and then some in the middle, I think.
Yeah, I mean, seeing as we're laying out all our cards on the table, as the creator of the Craig on Kanye segment on this very show, I've been a bit of a Taylor Swift naysayer probably over the last few years. I'm, you know, not much of a taysayer.
That was Craig's review, everybody. I hope you enjoyed it.
Please don't.
I'm turning his microphone off now.
And I was, the one episode of the show I was glad I wasn't going to be on was the Reputation episode, because I was like, I can't be doing with this album. I kind of knew what was coming. And actually, ridiculously, that had nothing to do with her prior music, because I was a big fan of 1989. I think she is a very talented songwriter. But she kind of got caught in this storm of like TMZ stuff and like the memes, and she was trying to control it by getting involved and adjusting her music to that, and I don't think she could really pull it off, and that kind of bore fruit on Reputation. But I think this is actually kind of a qualified success. Like, I think it gets her back on track. I think for a lot of it she plays to her strengths, and you know, not just the kind of songwriting, which is, there's some really strong stuff on this. It's too long and it is patchy, but I think the kind of tonal shift has been really well done. I mean, there's still some kind of like bad habits that I think she's picked up, and I don't think she's great at the kind of I'm a pop star, I'm going to be meta about the whole situation now, and you get some of those clunky lines and you just kind of have to breeze past them. But by and large, I think there's some great stuff on this. It's it's an album of two halves, kind of. The first half is, I think, is very strong. It loses me a bit in the second half, but there's enough here where I think definitely for her fans she's kind of gotten back on track. I think production wise we've got more of kind of Jack Antonoff, and again at times there's a lot of him taking the reins, and it just reminds you of Lorde and other, like, a lot of her peers. And I don't think she excels when she's trying to get into that arena either, but when she's just being herself. And the songs that you can tell started not from like a beat or the synths, but from her on guitar, they're very good, a lot of them. So yeah, I think this is definitely a step in the right direction.
Okay, so yeah, I'm definitely like reviewing this as the Taylor Swift fan. I really appreciated the nods to old Taylor Swift. So like things like Lover and Soon You'll Get Better. Like those are ones that I was like, oh my God, old Taylor
That's
isn't
like really
dead.
Old style, almost like country Taylor. Yeah.
And I think it was the perfect mix of 1989 and Red and Speak Now kind of mixed together. But I think it would be a really good 13 track album, or sure, like 14 track maybe, because even I was going through it before I came and I was like, oh, I can't talk about that song because I haven't actually fully
got into it
yet. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Or like, and there's songs that I go to straight away, like when I'm going to work, like I listen to Cruel Summer straight away, I listen to, you know, like, I don't know, Cornelia Street straight away. But there's others that I'm just like, and when I listen to any album, it does take me a long time to kind of fully gel with every song. Mm. But like, this could take me a really long time, because, and I'm delighted there's 18 tracks, don't get me wrong, but in terms of reviewing it, or in terms of like showing it to someone who isn't a fan, I'd be like, like, I think the first five songs summarize Taylor Swift. Like, I'd be like, okay, listen to the first five. You have like some pop songs in there, you have some, you know, emotional songs in there, you have some happy songs in there, and then that's all you need to know. And then I think anything past The Archer is kind of like when you have time, get to that, but listen to those first ones first.
So it should have been an EP, is what you're saying.
Like, I think The Archer is an amazing track.
It's a good track, really? Although it's doing that thing that you said last week about Baffer Lashes. It's just taking 80s aesthetic and playing dress up and not doing much with it. I do like the song.
It sounds good, but it's
that, and it's also like, oh, you've been hanging out with Haim quite a bit, right?
I think like the vocal melodies, the way she delivers on The Archer is like a much more kind of considered style that like I really, really liked. I think you're right about the length of it. And like, the weird thing is, I was kind of thinking, like, I was trying to figure out like what makes a really, really good pop album. And the,
you've
like,
already started thinking about that.
But like, one of the problems is, like, I mean, right? Yeah, I've only just started now. It's
like, vinyl. What
if you could make an album of pop songs? That would be incredible.
Vinyl pressed on the album that's coming out in 2 months.
But one of the big problems with like modern pop music at the moment is obviously you have to do the streaming thing, right? Yes. Where you have to release 18 tracks because you're going to get into all these playlists and it takes forever. Like, if this was done, say, during like the Red era, or like, you know, like older, what this would be, would it would cut out, it'd be like 10 tracks, and then she'd release like a deluxe version like 8 months later or something like that.
That's
and then
weird.
Suddenly that's all the extra tracks that you wouldn't usually get it
because
once,
she'd
like,
always
right?
She always does a deluxe version.
Yeah.
There's with an enhanced version and this on Spotify, which is bizarre. She intros lyrics, like, she's just like, you know, hey everyone, you know, I'll have a great time, and it's like portrait mode on your iPhone, and then it's just like it's Taylor's chosen selection of songs from the album, and then it's just the album. Like,
but she's done that before, and she's done that in previous albums as well, right? I think there's one for each album.
Really?
Yeah.
We also need to talk about Pitchfork, because Pitchfork, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but in the last six, or
they've reviewed every Taylor Swift
album. Oh, there's some
emotional
tie-in.
And they have reviewed from scratch every single Taylor Swift album. It's been a total propaganda campaign. Now, obviously, Pitchfork was sold to Condé Nast. That's going to open you up a little bit more to the mainstream. Fair enough. But it's so transparent. And like, I think their features editor, reviews editor would put up some tweets being like, if it was up to me, we would have reviewed them back in the day. Blah, 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 blah. But it's just like, it's a barrage, because like, you're literally just like on Twitter, you're just getting like every day or so, you're getting a fresh batch of, and on Red, Taylor is perfectly Taylor. And I'm like, and even like, yeah, there's some criticism in there, of course, but it genuinely felt bought. It felt, and I was like, really? Like, you're trying to get the Pitchfork? All the replies are like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Like, it seems weird. Not that Pitchfork can't review pop albums, they often do. But like, it's very strange. I don't know.
And did they review this up?
Yes, I think it got like a 6.7 or a 7 or something. And they were like, it's pretty good. But yeah, so I mean, ultimately, there's always going to be that kind of corporate cynicism with her regardless. I mean, I've said before that she should have a fucking TM next to her name at all times. But of course, she is a real human being, if not necessarily a real hero.
<I'm>
real. But yeah, so I was pleasantly surprised by how much I didn't dislike this.
Oh,
yeah.
Sick. Yes. That's all I wanted. Yeah,
there's good stuff on
it. Oh, that's why I'm yes, here. I can leave. See you later. I'm off.
No, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a recommend, but
no, but that's the most positive thing I've ever heard you say. not even about Taylor Swift, just in general. Yeah,
it's probably true. Actually,
I mean, like, this is just character assassination every day in my life here, guys.
You bring me onto like your podcast. Right now.
It moves at a clip. There's some very good stuff on it. I actually really love the penultimate track, which is called "It's Nice to Have a Friend."
Yeah, the production on that's great.
It sounds gorgeous, and I thought it was very melancholically, very understatedly nicely done. And also, I don't know what it is, but like, I kind of like when Brendan Urie shows up and
don't say it.
Tracks in, I'm like, yeah, you know, there's a bit of bounce off this one.
A bit of bounce off this
one. So, like, but that was one of the weirder things, is that like, me and You Need to Calm Down sound so completely removed from this.
I hate You Need to Calm Down. Still.
Okay, so
I'm not saying I like me, but it has some joy de vivre.
I cannot believe that line you as well. Like me. I
don't like
that.
It.
They took
it
because I don't even like it. Right, no.
I don't like it. It's not going on my best of 2019 long list or anything, but it's got like spoilers. it's got a certain charm to it.
So like, here's the thing. Her lead singles, or any, like, well, not any of the singles, a lot of the singles she releases from albums do not reflect the album in any way. Like, look at Shake It Off in 1989.
Yeah.
Or, like, you Look What You Made Me Do in Reputation. Me and Lover. Like, they never reflect. Or, like, what's the one? We're Never Getting Back Together in Red. Like, what was that?
Yeah.
But, like, so when I hear, like, Evan was like, oh, geez, what do you think of me? I was like, it's fine. I trust her. I know what she's doing. Like, she makes these radio-ready singles. Then it's like, grand, we've ticked them off. Now I can go and write my songs.
Yeah, like, I think the lead singles are prime examples of her really trying to gauge the conversation around her and then responding and being kind of clever and above it, but it never really comes off.
Mm.
Like, she's at her best when she's writing really personally, not about the kind of tabloid Taylor, but her actual life. Like, you know, Soon You'll Get Better, which is Better Mother, who's dealing with cancer, is really good. It's nice to hear Dixie Chicks have been let out of Guantanamo or whatever the hell they've been.
She did a long interview with Laura Snapes in The Guardian, and I think it was in that interview that she said that she was like, I really respect the Dixie Chicks for standing up against George Bush back in the day. And she was like, but it's horrifying to me that killed their career. And she's
totally.
I've obviously had to be very, very careful, but I don't want to be that person anymore. I want to come out now and say things. And so that must be a very obvious nod to try and get them back in.
And that's one of the main issues as well with the record, though, is that, like, you know, she's slightly more leaning towards more kind of political commentary. Like, obviously, you have the one, London Boy, I think it's called.
Okay,
so first of all, London Boy, right? Can you imagine if she had written Dublin Boy and how shit that song would be?
It's not as bad as Galway Girl. I will say that for
it. It is not as bad as Galway Girl.
But it is close.
It's in the same,
like, imagine Dublin Boy. Imagine how shit that would be.
With London Boy, like, you can, like London sounds pretty, you know? You can be like, High Street, I don't know, like West End, but like, what would you'd be like here, you'd
Temple
be like
Bar.
Lombard Street, like, do you know what I mean? Like, oh yeah, let's go for a walk down Lombard
Street.
And
like, you'd have Emmett Kerwin in the Idris Elba role getting a copy of Trinity.
God, yeah.
Idris Elba,
James Corden's little chuckle as well.
What's going on with Idris Elba being like, oh, you can get on my scooter and we can go around London? I was like, what the fuck is this?
It's taken from fucking Carpool Karaoke.
Is it?
Yeah, that's James Corden laughing back at him.
Oh my god, that's upsetting.
That's a bit random.
So then with that one, and then obviously The Man then, but like, The Man, obviously, if Taylor is speaking to a more conservative kind of right-wing section of her fan base or something, then it's probably good that she's trying to introduce sexism to them.
Although,
but
I think
it's
that's
so
an example.
Base level that it's like it's only just commentating on it. It's not actually dissecting.
Can
it
we really? So, but can we really ask for much more from a Taylor Swift though?
So the thing is, I read the Elle interview. I think it was the Elle interview, or it could have been one with Vogue. And so she got a lot of criticism in 2016 because she didn't say who she was voting for. And because she didn't say who she was voting for, everyone's like, she's voting for Trump. And
she's an alt-right icon, remember
and
that?
Remember that? Anyway, in this interview, she said that she voted for Hillary and that she said that she was so hated that if she was like, if I say I'm voting for Hillary, I could ruin this. Like, I could make it even worse than it is.
Imagine
being like, I am so hated.
Yeah. There's no winning, basically.
There's no winning. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So
I'm less like than Hillary Clinton.
So, like, I do think that, like, that's slowly creeping back into politics thing. Like, even though we're complaining about it, I think it's like almost her safest bet right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And again, it's even just the slight tick over is a good thing.
You also have to remember that she came from a fan base that is Tennessee.
Yeah.
She, like, her...
Well, yeah, and like, this would be the point that I would make. Yeah. Is that basically, like, you know, you have to think less about, say, Taylor singing to people like us. And you think about, like, a lot of her fan base who would be, like, really, really deep south kind of American.
But is that still her fan base? I don't know if it is. She's so, like, in the pop sphere now, though. I don't know if...
She's also, like, really playing up the Nashville thing for this as well. She's, like, she did all her main interviews in Nashville and, like... There was the whole NFL announcement of the album and like that. And like, I don't know. I think she's definitely like leaning into the American Sweetheart thing again.
Yeah.
Right? I mean.
Yeah, for sure. And also one last thing, I guess, even another kind of sidebar, because, you know, for better or for worse, with Taylor Swift, there are always a million sidebars and kind of tentacles, I guess, to try and wrestle hold of. One of which One of which is stans and stan culture, which continues to fascinate and upset me. You have all these Twitter accounts out there with, like, Taylor Swift avatars and Lover Out August 23rd, yada, 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 who then pollute other musicians' Twitter feeds, which is ridiculous. But I don't understand when they, like, the stans, who obviously worship her, seem to want to fucking, like, Suspiria style, just consume her, because she tweets, here's my interview with Laura Snapes, I loved doing this, yada yada, and all the replies are, announce the man as next single, announce Lover as next single, or we unstan, announce this as your next single, or we unfollow, bitch, you better announce this. And I'm like, first of all, why does that matter in any way? And second of all, you fucking entitled cunts. Like, whoever the fuck they are, and I assume they're,
or
like,
could
bots,
they be Russian bots?
Yeah. What's going on? But, like, what an unhealthy thing. What a horrific thing.
I think, though, like...
I feel sorry for
that you. But that is every pop star.
Yeah, it is. Like, totally. But it's so fucked up.
BTS?
Yes.
That is next level. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, Ariana Grande, Justin Bieber, everyone.
One Direction.
Like,
yeah,
we're, like, months away from the likes of BTS having their own armies that actually physically get out on the streets and take down small nations.
Just for a record, we're pretty much BTS fans on the show, so don't come after us.
Oh, yeah, that's something to do with BTS.
Yeah, so I guess back to the album real quick. Yeah, I think it's...
real quick. In the album review section.
Overall, the songs are expertly constructed, and unlike Reputation, they didn't leave me cold. I don't know if I'm going to go back to it. I don't know if I'm going to isolate it too much. I still find her difficult to warm to. I still question a lot of her motives and motivations and everything. But at the same time, if you want a pop album in 2019 that does the fucking job, I think this is a pretty decent one, and I'm giving it a 6 out of 10.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for the first few listens, I was listening out for, like, Kanye references and stuff. And there's quite a few. I mean, you have Cruel Summer, you've got kind of Wolves. I turned into, like, Russ Cole in the storage unit, just being like, oh, that's a Kanye thing. And after a few listens through the whole album, I was like, a lot of that kind of annoying stuff faded away. I was kind of charmed by a lot of it. I think it's maybe half pretty great and then half questionable. So it would be 5 out of 10, but... feeling generous, probably a 6 out of 10 album for me.
Just back from your holidays, you're in a
good
mood.
Yeah, I'm still in the tipping mood, yeah.
Dahi.
Yeah, like, I mean, I've probably come across as probably the most negative person out of this, I've just realised. But in general, like, I enjoyed a good few of the songs. I've just, my main frustration is, I like when I can see what a pop star is trying to say on one singular album and nothing else. And that frustration kind of came across with a lot of these different tracks, and it feels a bit disjointed to me.
It does feel like a collection of songs. I know that sounds like a ridiculous thing to say, but you know when it feels...
Well, there's all
loose.
This stuff this year is, like, people talking about mixtapes, and this would be, if I had to, like, kind of decide between an album and mixtape, I'd be calling this a mixtape.
I feel like this is a playlist, to be quite honest.
Oh, it is a bit of a Craig special as well. It's a Craig special in that you could pick out, like,
maybe
a really
I'll
good
down,
album
yeah.
out of this. Yeah.
You totally
it's heard the life of Pablo.
I'll give it a 6 as well. I will come back to some of these tracks for sure.
So you guys are kind of viewing it as, like, an album, but as a fan, no, I mean, like,
12 out of 10.
But I mean, like, she's released these albums in Target that have, like, pages from her diary and stuff. Like, she has these 4 deluxe albums that all have 30 pages from her diary, which is 120 pages from her diary over the years. And, like, when you've been a fan, and, like, I saw one of the pages and it's like, It's from the night before the Grammys when she doesn't win Red. And she's like, all the things I would do to hear Album of the Year is Red. And like she date, and that's like the date beside and stuff like that. So like as like a fan who's followed her for so long to actually be able to see her thoughts like for, yeah. for the past like decade.
So you're reviewing the era more
I'm going to rate like just Lover as like a package that she yeah. has like kind of released now. So like, just everything from like all the little, she calls them Easter eggs, like the like you have in like games and stuff like yeah. the Easter eggs that she's put everywhere for this album. So I am going to give it an 8.5. The only reason I'm leaving out some marks is just the length of it. It would be such a wholesome album if there was just a few songs that I don't haven't warmed to yet. So it's 8.5 for
all right.
me.
Thank you so much for coming in, Alice.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
This episode of No Encore was engineered by Eve Murray. In the other listening corner, Craig, what have you been listening to?
I'm still persevering with trying to get into the Grateful Dead. It's really tough because it's so daunting and it's all like bootleg concerts for like the last few decades. But there's a good playlist which I might tweet out. So yeah, Grateful Dead, mate.
Alice, apart from Taylor Swift, have you been listening to anything?
Would you believe I have? And I have been listening to Row. Irish artist Row recently.
Oh, she played that festival you were at.
Yeah. So really liking it. Really liking it.
Dahi?
Tandem Felix, All Day Long. He had a new track out last Friday. Or like a track that was released on YouTube as a live video and is now a full single. And it's definitely worth a listen. And I cannot wait for his album, which is in October.
I'm very excited as well. I have been listening to Marilyn Manson because the new 1975 song reminded me of it. And I went back to a big playlist I made about Marilyn Manson. And I'm like, fucking hell. Like you step away from Manson for a while, you forget how great some of his songs are. Like some of the songwriting is genuinely exceptional. Like, yes. you know, whatever you think about him as an individual. Some great stuff there. I've also been listening to the new Elbow album. That doesn't sound like something I would do.
Why?
I've slagged them off many as a time, haven't I?
Go on.
Stay tuned. Stay tuned. I interviewed Guy Garvey from Elbow. And yes, listener, I know I've said bad things about Elbow before, but that does not...
Did you say them to his face, did you?
Of course not. That does not preclude me from interviewing an individual who, just because I have a musical, you know, dislike for
it. Sure. Just music.
Anyway, interview Guy Garvey. He was really fucking sound.
Of course he is. He's such an obvious sound.
Also
man.
Very interesting. And that album comes out in October, and that's when the interview will come out as well. Cool. So stay tuned for that. Our exit music this week, one of those weeks where I forgot to do it, and then I found one. Thanks to the Northern Nine website for their compiling of Irish songs that I was too lazy to go and find one myself. Luke Sharkey from Northern Nine, who I like quite a bit, good writer, good ear as well. He picked out a track called Blind by a band called Never Wait, which I'd never heard of before. They're a kind of alternative three-piece. And this track is kind of bizarre. Like, it's very produced. It's got, like, big fucking auto-tune vocals all over it. And there's a weird sense of emo-ness to it, which kind of appealed to me. On first listen, I was like, yeah, this is pretty good. I like it a bit. As Luke notes, you know, it's still a work in progress, and he thinks it might lean a little bit too much toward the theatrical. But there's lots of little kind of clever little touches on it, so I enjoyed it. This is Blind by Never Wait. My name is Dave Hanready. This has been No Encore. There will be No Encore. Back next week.
Unboxing all the light from inside your mind. Calling all the shots, but you are blind. Distortion on the clocks, they're in rewind. Echoes of memories are left behind. Falling from the edge, you take your time.
This podcast is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
The only thing better than grinding all night for your side hustle is your roommate picking you up with Mickey D's breakfast. The perfect pickup deal.
There's a deal for every morning at McDonald's.
Right now, taste breakfast perfection when you get a warm and savory sausage McMuffin with egg for just $2.50. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with combo meal.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.